First, Marlon Dixon was arrested when he was 14 years old for his role in the high-profile murder of a Milwaukee man. When he finished serving his prison sentence, Marlon was 32 years old. He'd spent more than half his life behind bars. Milwaukee County is taking a second look at cases like Marlon's and how young people are sentenced. Some officials say childhood trauma is an important piece of the puzzle that wasn't taken into account in the past. In a new series for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our next guest looks at trauma, crime, and incarceration of young people. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you charged with a crime at a young age? Do you work in the youth justice system yourself? And in general, how do you think youth should be sentenced in Wisconsin? What should be the bar, the line for when younger people are tried and charged as adults? What should be done to help youth who face hardships? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. James Causey is a projects reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab. He's been reporting on Milwaukee since he was in high school. James recently wrote a series called Life Correction, taking a closer look at how childhood trauma runs into the criminal justice system. James, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start where you did, James. How did you get connected with Marlon Dixon?
Well, it's really interesting. I was a O'Brien Fellow at Marquette University, and I received this call from a woman from Denver, Colorado, who said who wanted to know if the name Marlon Dixon rung a bell. And I told her it didn't. And then she asked me if I heard about the Charlie Young Jr. beating case from 2002. And of course, everyone heard about that. Mm-hmm. And she told me that Marlon was the young man who got the most time from that case. And I just couldn't believe anybody was still incarcerated from that case, because most of the people who participated were so young. And she told me that he would be getting out in a year. And she wanted to know if I could connect him to any kind of programs once he was released, because she was worried that he would end up back in prison if he didn't have those programs in place or able to find housing and things like that. And I told her I would look out and see what I could do. She gave me his information in prison, and we started communicating. And then she told me, you know, he had a kid, and he was 14 when he was arrested, but he had a 5-month-old. And I just wanted to know what life was like for this 14-year-old being charged as an adult and spending that much time behind bars.
And that brought you to looking at adverse childhood experiences for kids. Can you talk about what Marlon's life had been like growing up?
Oh, yeah. He's the case study for trauma, actually. You know, before he participated in this this beating, his father was stabbed to death outside a methadone clinic by a man who he got into an altercation with. Prior to that, his father was very abusive to him. He beat on him, cursed at him, all kinds of things. And he grew up in a very violent neighborhood where sirens and fighting and shootings and things like that were a constant. And on top of that, you know, the educational system failed him as well. He really couldn't read well. And, you know, by the age of 14, he read at a first or second grade reading level. So he struggled throughout his life. You know, his mother did the best she could raising him and his siblings, but it was just like the streets had a stronger pull than a mother's love at that time.
Now, in talking to Marlon, he did not claim he wasn't responsible for these crimes at the young age of 14. But this started you on a track, James, of looking at how people who grew up in Marlon's situation with so many strikes against them, so many traumas, and how they're treated in the justice system. Where did you go from Marlon's case?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people, when we hear the word trauma, we think that that's something that was always there. Like, you know, trauma is talked about so much. You know, we know our military veterans and people like that have experienced trauma. We also know that, you know, police officers who go to scenes all the time like that experience trauma. And but when we talk about childhood trauma, that was a relatively new concept back in 2002 when a beating took place. No one was talking about childhood trauma. And the people who were bringing it up, when it was brought up during this case, they were laughed at. They were told that this didn't exist. This was the age of the super predator talk. And people were talking about, you know, groups of youth going around preying on people, and these kids were just bad, and they were super predators. So that was the language of that day. So, but now, you know, after 2002, the childhood trauma started to come up more and more around 2004, 2005, and that's where people really started to talk about it more. Unfortunately for Marlon, that wasn't his case. I mean, nobody was talking about it by the time he was sentenced. But what we discovered today and what we know today about how the brain is, how a child's brain develops, what happens to you as a child has a lot of impacts on what happens to you as an adult. It impacts your emotions. It impacts how you do in school. It impacts how you have relationships. It impacts you your health, your physical health. You know, if you've been traumatized as a kid, we've learned that it can have impacts on your heart, your lungs, how you your overall stress levels that causes your cortisol to go up. So it's so many things that we learned about the impact of childhood trauma and how that impacts your body that it's absolutely amazing what we learned. Unfortunately, not enough is being done to address the traumas that our youth are going through on a daily basis. You know, our schools need to have more counselors on hand, and we need to really, really step up how we tackle this issue.
Talking to James Causey, projects reporter from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab, looking at his latest series on trauma and youth incarceration. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest. Maybe your experiences going through, and I hope recovering from trauma as a young person. If you work in the system, the youth justice system somewhere yourself or as a counselor, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. James, you mentioned that idea of the super predator. You quote the guy, the academic who came up with this concept of the irredeemable super predator back, I think in the 80s or 90s, now saying he was wrong. And, you know, it's like these kids need more emotional help. They need hugs as much as anything. What kind of solutions do you see out there that we could use more of to keep a kid from ending up in the criminal justice system in the first place?
Well, you know, honestly, you know, things that really help youth deal with issues of trauma is really being able to see value in themselves. For instance, one part of my series our county executive, he would have been a part of this beating case too had he not been evicted, you know, 3 months prior to this whole thing taking place, because he knew the boys involved. He knew Charlie Young Jr. I'm referring to David Crowley. And one thing that he said saved him was the fact that he got involved with a program called Urban Underground, run by Charlene and Reggie Moore. Reggie Moore, he's also ran the Office of Violence Prevention here in Milwaukee. And one thing that they taught the young people how to do is see value in themselves, see value in others. And one thing David Crowley said, it was the first program to teach him how to love and how to love another person. Other things that help, first jobs. You know, David Crowley was able to find a job at the age of 14, cutting grass, working for this lawn service. And his employer was this black man who hired a lot of young people to work and teach them the value of work and how important it is to come to work every day, be on time, and have some level of responsibility. You know, 75 to 80% of our young people today living in very troubled areas can't find work. And so those things really help. But honestly, mentorship is one of the strongest factors that come into play here. You know, you don't have to have like a medical background. But if you could just talk to a youth who may not, whose father may not be around, or it may have been in an abusive situation, sometimes just talking to a young person and getting them to express how they feel, that goes a long ways too.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Donna is with us in Wauwatosa. Donna, hi.
Hi. I absolutely agree that there has to be a lot of intervention with these families that have a lot of trauma. And I'm not even sure where to begin, but I did want to say this. You said that the educational system failed him because he couldn't read. I spent years working in MPS, and in order to teach kids, they have to show up. And a lot of times these kids didn't show up, or they moved from school to school to school. And, you know, as teachers, we want to teach kids to read. We want to help them, but they have to show up too. I'm just wondering if this young man, you know, wasn't skipping out all the time, if he actually showed up.
Donna, thanks for the call. James, the difficulties a kid like Marlon faced in the school system, can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I could talk a little bit about that. So one thing that I think happened with Marlon, he wasn't a kid who got into a lot of trouble in school, but I think he was a kid who he did have his struggles in, you know, he read at a second grade level. It was no way in hell he should have been in eighth grade. I mean, he kept getting passed, and that doesn't do anybody any good if you keep passing a kid who can't read, because if this pattern would have continued, imagine him passing 12th grade, reading on the third or fourth grade level. What good does that do for him or society? He can only turn to a couple of things, you know, crime and maybe the illegal drug trade, because if you can't read, that's one of the basic foundations for a lot of things. So I'm not just blaming teachers, but there's something, he fell through the cracks and someone has to take responsibility for that. Because, I mean, one thing that he told me that was very telling, when he was incarcerated, he tried to write his daughter's mom to tell her, you know, that he cared for her and cared for his daughter, but he couldn't even spell Fond du Lac. So he couldn't even spell the street that she lived on. So he couldn't even write her letters. That's pretty bad.
Donna, thanks for that call. We're talking to James Causey, projects reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab, talking with James about his new series, exploring connections between trauma, youth, and the criminal justice system. You can join in at 800-642-1234. For youth who end up in the criminal justice system, do you think there needs to be more attention to these kind of traumas that may have led a kid there in the first place? Have you encountered this system yourself, maybe as a youth or maybe as someone in the criminal justice system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation with James Causey, projects reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking with James about his recent series called Life Correction, with a closer look at the role childhood trauma can play in juvenile sentencing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. James, I want to get back to the story of Marlon Dixon, arrested as a teenager. He spent 18 years in prison. You and fellow reporter Angela Peterson were there the day Marlon was released. Angela captured some of his reflections on that day. Here's a clip from the video that you posted on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel website.
I'm going to go on and live my life in a way that now I know what it's like to be a part of something like that, to be inside something like that. Now I know what I must do, you know, to make sure that other people never, you know, join in that type of mentality or join into that type of group and to do something like that.
James, you talked earlier, the initial contact you had was about resources for someone like Marlon, hoping to start a new life after prison. And as we heard there, hoping to prevent people from doing the same things he had done. What resources are out there?
Yeah, so one thing that I pointed out in my series is that the main resource that people need who are coming out of prison is housing, you know, because a lot of people think, well, they could go back to where they were, you know, but, you know, in the case of Marlon, in the case of a lot of people who have been locked up for decades, people have died, people have moved on, been evicted and things like that. So going in some cases, you can't go back to the same neighborhood that you were living in because, you know, other circumstances come up. You know, he has like 21 things that he can't do or else he'd be violating his parole. Like he can't be living with someone who has a criminal record. And his two of his brothers have criminal records. So he technically can't be around them. And it's a lot of things that he could do to violate his parole. So he has to be very careful and walk on thin ice. And that's why being on this extended supervision for an additional 22 years after he was released is just, it almost sets up people for failure because there's so many things that could be in violation of what he can't do. And one thing that I want to stress, too, is like I gave Marlon an ACE test. It's a test that determines your childhood trauma when he was incarcerated. It's like 10 questions that really ask basic questions like, have you ever seen your mother abused? Have you been abused? Have you been sexually abused? And it asks a series of 10 questions like that. And he scored an 8 out of 10, which is very high because typically you want to score a 3 or less. And this determines, some people say it could determine how your future ends up, although you know, it's debatable, but when you have more traumas like that that happened to you as a child, it's not really a good thing. So, you know, what I really wanted to do is stress that, you know, in order for people to who come out of prison, they have to be put on the right path. And housing was what was a tough issue for him because he went back to live with his mother. He couldn't really stay there. And fortunately for him, he met a young lady. And she's like the best thing that happened to him. And they live in Menominee Falls now. Out of a lot of the traumas and a lot of that, the constant sirens and shootings and things like that, that he would hear if he was staying where his mother stays.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Madison. Scott, hi.
Hey, hi. Thank you for having this program. So I'm a teacher in the Madison School District, and I heard kind of what was said before about, you know, that he slid through the cracks and he's at a second grade level. And we, as teachers, have this happen all the time where we need, like, more support. We see kids all the time with trauma and with that are behind grade level, and there's not enough support. So even, like, right now I've got kids below grade level that I can't meet their needs right now, even though I work on different things with them and I'll try to get special supports. We don't have like the manpower, the people power just in the building because there's so much more need now. And if we really want to stop this sort of thing from happening, this is where it should be. It should be like in the schools, like more supports for kids with trauma, with kids that are below grade level, because yeah, we're not serving them well if we just keep passing them on. And it's not that the teachers don't know. We want them to get services. We just don't have the ability to give it to them.
Scott, thanks for the call. James.
I feel your pain on that. And I feel the pain of a lot of teachers. And I've heard this as a constant, you know, after this series ran, where teachers felt like they're being blamed in some way for the Marlon Dixons of the world. And that was not the intent of this. I do agree that teachers, you know, bottom line is, teachers, everybody knows, everybody has had a good teacher, everybody has had a bad teacher, right? I know the great teachers I have made and formed me who I am today. And I've had some teachers that were just kind of just there. But I know a lot of teachers are very passionate about their kids. They're passionate about what they do, and they love their kids. Unfortunately, they can't do it all. And that's where I think these schools need to become educational centers, where not only where they educate the students, but they need to educate families. You know, Marlon's mother was overwhelmed. His father was a high school dropout. So, you know, maybe we need to look at education in a different way. And all this stimulus money that came in, I want to see these educational institutions, these schools, do something with this funding to address and help teachers do the most that they can, because teachers can't do it alone. I've been in schools where I've seen, you know, 30 kids in a classroom and a teacher not even having a paralegal trying to do it by themselves. That's impossible. Even with some of the best students, it's almost impossible. So teachers do need the support, and we got to figure out a way to give them that support.
Thanks a lot for that call, Scott, at 800-642-1234. Talking to James Causey from the Journal Sentinel about his new piece on youth trauma and the criminal justice system. Time for one more caller. Heidi is with us in Dunn County. Hi, Heidi, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for this topic. I am a trauma specialist, and even for me to call in being in private practice, it's actually difficult for me because there's so many community members who frown upon youth who have been incarcerated, who are coming out of incarceration, whether coming out of day treatments and service centers. And I believe that especially our court system, probation officers, a lot of mental health services, a lot of our schools, they don't know what to do and how to help treat these youth. And they believe that these are bad kids and I don't necessarily want them around me when they get out, rather than stepping out and saying, hey, let's give this person a try. What services can we do to advocate? And I just wonder if maybe you have any further resources on what we can do to...
Heidi, I'm going to jump in because we're just about out of time. James, just in our last minute, you looked at what Milwaukee County is doing. Briefly, are some of those attitudes changing that Heidi is worried about?
Yeah, the attitudes are changing, but they're not changing fast enough. And that needs to improve. I mean, there's programs out there, but, you know, a lot of these programs suffered greatly during the COVID pandemic, you know, where they were there before the pandemic happened, where they could have helped people. But Marlon was released during the pandemic, right in the heart of the pandemic. And so a lot of the programs that could have been there to assist him were shuttered, and they couldn't provide any services for him. So what we need to do is, like, now that we're coming out of this pandemic, those programs need to be beefed up and backed financially so that they can help more people. But it's still not enough, even if we fully fund most of these programs that are trying to do the work. So we need to make a complete change in order to help the Marlon Dixons of the world. Or else, if we don't help him, guess what? We're just going to keep this cycle going. He's going to end up back in the system, and we're just going to keep this cycle going. And I don't think anybody wants that.
James, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
James Causey writes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab. We talked with him about a series called Life Corrections, looking at childhood trauma and criminal sentencing. You can find a link to that series on our website at wpr.org/centraltime.